headlines, President Raisi says Iran's maximum resistance has foiled Washington's maximum pressure, as evidenced by the U.S. officials' acknowledgement of the campaign's failure. The U.S. planning to deploy a missile destroyer and fighter jets to the UAE a day after it fired Patriot interceptors to repel a Yemeni missile strike on the Persian Gulf state. And the UK says sanctions will come into force as soon as Moscow invades Ukraine, while the Russian president warns of U.S. attempts to drag his country into war. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this hour, Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, says Washington's policy of maximum pressure has failed to achieve its goals.
When the Americans openly acknowledge that they have failed in their maximum pressure policy, an ignominious failure, this is a victory for the Iranian nation.
Raisi said that Iran's policy of maximum resistance has offset the U.S. pressure. Raisi made the remarks during his visit to the mausoleum of the late founder of Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, on the occasion of the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Back in 2018, former President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew the U.S. from the 2015 deal between Iran and world powers and intensified a campaign of sanctions to force Tehran to negotiate a new agreement. And Iran is marking the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The event is marked every year with a 10-day celebration period known as the 10-Day Dawn. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has been present at this year's ceremonies and filed this report.
43 years ago this day, millions of Iranians flocked to Tehran's Mehrabad airport to welcome the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, back to the country after 14 years of exile. The historic day was a milestone that put an end to centuries of monarchy in Iran. Ever since, Iranians have celebrated the occasion every year for 10 days. The event starts on the anniversary of Imam Khomeini's homecoming and culminates on the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. This period is called Dehe-i Fajr, or the 10-day dawn. As with every year, the ceremonies began with a visit by leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, to Imam Khomeini's mausoleum. The mausoleum also hosted state officials and people from all walks of life to mark the occasion.
Like every year, we gather today in this holy place to pay respect to Imam Khomeini, a man who changed the course of history in our country and established a political system that respects our beliefs as Muslims.
Today is an important day for us. We, the new generation, were not present those days, but we participate in this ceremony to learn about the personality of Imam Khomeini.
The Islamic Revolution was led by Imam Khomeini, who spent some 14 years in exile in Iraq, Turkey, and France, from where he led a swelling grassroots movement, which ultimately led to the toppling of former Iranian monarch Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The revolution was driven by anti-imperialist sentiments, since Mohammad Reza Pahlavi was believed to be heavily dependent on Western powers, especially the U.S.
During the Shah period, other countries like the U.S. made decisions for us. Iran was a U.S. colony. They were in our country to plunder our oil and other resources.
We lost many of our beloved ones for the sake of the Islamic Republic. By celebrating the event, we seek to say no to foreign interference in our country. We still stick to those ideals no matter how much pressure and sanctions the U.S. imposes on our nation.
Less than 2 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iranians took part in a referendum where more than 98% of eligible voters voted yes to the Islamic Republic as a new political system.
To Iranians, the 10-day dawn is reminiscent of their struggle for independence, a legacy that they're not willing to give up on, even if it means they have to endure U.S. sanctions. Now, one of the major goals of holding such massive celebrations is to pass on these messages to new generations. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The United States growing more engaged in the war on Yemen. The Pentagon is preparing to send fifth-generation fighter jets to the UAE in the wake of Yemeni strikes deep inside the Persian Gulf state. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says that Washington will also deploy guided missile destroyer USS Cole to Abu Dhabi. The U.S. will continue to provide early warning intelligence to the UAE. 2 days ago, Washington also intercepted a Yemeni projectile headed for the UAE. The Yemeni army has warned that it will continue to strike the Emirates as long as it keeps targeting Yemeni people. On Monday, Yemeni armed forces targeted a number of sensitive facilities. In the capital, Abu Dhabi, the UAE is part of the Saudi coalition that's been waging a bloody war on Yemen for 7 years. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have been killed directly from the war or indirectly from hunger and disease. We've reached out to political commentator Jason Unruh to hear his perspective on the latest warning the Yemeni army has given. The UAE, here's what he had to tell us.
The UAE seems to be relatively good to go along with it, to give them whatever kind of support, at least political support to some degree, and I highly suspect material support in the background or whatever form that it might take, and that this, of course, would lead the Yemenis to bring the war to the UAE, as we have seen on at least one occasion, and then, you know, we're having them say that they're not afraid to strike out at basically anyone who's going to support the destruction of their country and the slaughter of their people. So maybe because I'm not really a war strategist kind of person, but it does seem like Saudi Arabia is looking for help. I mean, that at least that's how it appears to my eyes. I mean, that wasn't how it was done at the beginning, but this change has been made. So I think that it is a change to some degree, but exactly what it is probably only in the heads of the Saudi planners themselves.
Our correspondent in Gaza, Asher Shannon, says the Israeli blockade is taking an ever more severe toll on the Palestinian healthcare system and inflaming the coronavirus crisis in the besieged enclave.
The situation in Gaza is extremely grim. Yesterday, the director of Shifa Hospital said that he expects that there is at least one case in every house in the Gaza Strip as the Israeli blockade continues to take its toll on the enclave. A few days ago, the Minister of Health announced that Israel has been preventing the entry of testing equipment and testing kits as well as surgical hospital equipment into the Gaza Strip. The Israeli blockade in place since 2007 has complicated all aspects of life in Gaza, especially in the health sector. At least 1,100 people have died directly because of the Israeli blockade. And also Gaza suffers from shortages in medicines and hospital supplies, and also the Israeli regime refuses or places tight restrictions on the exit permits to chronic patients who seek treatment in the occupied West Bank or in Al-Quds, Arash.
Lebanese capital Beirut holds a ceremony honoring tens of athletes and sports teams who've thrown their matches in solidarity with Palestine. Our correspondent Mayim Salah has more in this report.
In honor of tens of athletes and sporting clubs, the Global Campaign to Return to Palestine held the International Forum to honor anti-normalization athletes under the slogan Al-Quds Golden Medal in the Lebanese capital, Beirut.
We are honoring these champions from Iran and different Arab countries because they refused to play against an Israeli player because they don't recognize the so-called Israel. They paid a heavy price for that. We look at them as heroes.
Fathi Nourin, an Algerian and world champion who pulled out of four different competitions after finding out he would compete with an Israeli competitor, was punished by the International Judo Federation, which withdrew his Olympics accreditation. But he tells Press TV that nothing is more significant than Palestine.
For us as athletes in Algeria, nothing is more valuable than the Palestinian cause, which is the cause of all Arabs and Muslims. And we are in solidarity with them and back them in any way we can. We have the chance to send a message to the world and raise awareness through sports about the Israeli terrorism, since the Israelis have been trying to win recognition through sports competition. competitions, and we can, through sports, show the truth.
The athletes were honored through their matches in international and regional tournaments to protest the presence of Israeli players or teams. Two chess players also had their share of a gold medal. So did 14-year-old Mauritanian Mohammed Abdulrahman.
There was like three people that qualified from Africa, and I qualified. And during that tournament, it was the last round, I played against this Israeli guy, and I just didn't play since it's a common gesture, and I stand with Palestine.
The global campaign to return to Palestine stressed that they wanted to launch this initiative to show that these athletes who paid a price, whether being dismissed from international tournaments or deprived of important medals and valuable prizes, have won people's respect for their stance in defense of Palestine and the culture of resistance. These athletes said they decided to rescind an international competition and prize if it meant recognizing Israeli occupation and apartheid state. Yet little did they know that by so doing, they became champions for millions of hearts across the Arab and Muslim worlds. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Turkish military pounding the positions of Kurdish militants in northern Iraq and Syria. The defense ministry says the airstrikes were carried out Tuesday against suspected bases of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, known as the PKK, and the People's Protection Units, YPG, in Derik and Sinjar. The Iraqi Autonomous Kurdistan region says the attacks did leave casualties, but has not released the details. Turkey views PKK as a terrorist group and has carried out numerous attacks against the group. The PKK has bases and training camps in the Sinjar region of northern Iraq on the mountainous border with Turkey. Ankara has also a military presence in Syria, where it has seized swaths of land in military operations since 2016. And now to tensions over Ukraine and the contradictory assessments by Western officials over the possibility of a war erupting in the region. French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian says there are no indications at this stage to suggest that Russia is preparing for a military action against Ukraine. But different signals are coming from the capitals of other Western states. Britain is threatening to impose sanctions on Russia if it invades its neighbor, with Prime Minister Boris Johnson saying it's vital for Russia to choose diplomacy. And the United States keeps alleging that Russia is preparing for an invasion, but President Putin has warned that the West is seeking to drag Russia into a war. The propaganda has even driven Ukraine's president to urge the Western states to tone down their rhetoric on the threat of war, saying such overstatements cause panic and harm to the country's economy. And the Omicron variant of the coronavirus keeps surging across the world, and the Czech Republic is the latest country to report record daily cases. More than 57,000 new infections in the past 24 hours, the country's highest single daily tally so far, but officials say hospitalizations remain steady and well below the previous waves. Denmark is another European country with a daily average of around 50,000 infections. It's also the first country in the EU lifting all of the COVID-related restrictions. The World Health Organization, however, says these restrictions should be removed slowly and with caution. The world body is warning that many countries have not even yet experienced the peak of the Omicron variant. Well, the conclusions of a much-anticipated inquiry into allegations of parties held at the UK Prime Minister's office during lockdowns last year is finally out. Although published in its redacted form, the report has fueled anger among the public, political opposition, and members of Boris Johnson's own Conservative Party. Saeed Purazaz warned this report.
At 11:30 a.m. Monday, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson received an important email. In the attachment, a damning report into alleged parties under his roof last year. Among other things, a 13-page report by senior civil servant Sue Gray looked at 16 gatherings during the pandemic and found that the behavior was difficult to justify, with failures of leadership and judgment, and too little thought was given to what was happening across the country.
The complete version of the Sue Gray report is yet to be published, pending a police investigation. But the sheer scale of potential breaches meant that Boris Johnson had to face furious MPs in the building behind me in penitent mode. Again.
I want to apologize. I know that millions of people across this country have made extraordinary sacrifices over the last 18 months.
To the opposition, sorry was not enough.
The British public aren't fools. They never believed a word of it. They think the Prime Minister should do the decent thing and resign. Of course he won't, because he is a man without shame.
He has been investigated by the police. He misled the House. He must now resign.
Members of the Prime Minister's own party didn't pull any punches either.
Either my right honourable friend had not read the rules, or didn't understand what they meant, and others around him, or they didn't think the rules applied to number 10. Which was it?
And while the Prime Minister and the people around him were allegedly having a good time away from prying eyes, the rest of the people adhered to the rules. Those who didn't were stopped unceremoniously.
What it would take for this Prime Minister to go, I don't know. If this doesn't get in his way, then God help us all, frankly, in terms of politics in this country.
People are sceptical, and I think a lot of people also kind of think with the police, you know, quite rightly, obviously, number 10, there's a police presence. So people in the police were aware that, or should have been aware that, you know, something was going on in the back garden.
While people were dying and while people were unable to attend funerals, for him to be holding parties and agreeing to parties to be held when he made the rules is fairly immoral.
The public mood here is one of outrage at the moment, but experts say what Boris Johnson desperately needs now is not public support, but the backing of his own party members to avoid a leadership challenge. Saeed Purizap, London.
At least a dozen historically black colleges and universities in the United States received threats of mass shootings and bomb attacks. The threats in cities from Baltimore to New Orleans has forced authorities to enforce campus lockdowns. This coincides with the first day of the U.S. Black History Month. On Monday, a wave of similar threats forced the cancellation of classes at other schools. The White House says it takes these threats, quote, incredibly seriously, but that they still don't know what has motivated the threats. Last year, the U.S. intelligence services warned that racially motivated violent extremists, such as white supremacists, would seek to carry out mass casualty attacks in the country. And that's a wrap for now.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-1 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Siyutu
Çömen.
Yani
Bazaar. Know what it feels like to be sick. You feel sluggish, fatigued, or lose your appetite, and perhaps become more sensitive to pain and cold. Many times, people can treat themselves at home with self-care and homemade remedies. Other times, a trip to the doctor does the trick. But even then, some ailments require more advanced interventions for diagnosis and therapies provided by hospitals. This is where medical devices come in handy. The health sector is mainly dependent on the accuracy and zero failure of advanced medical technology to get the job done. Hello everyone, I'm Sarah Adema and welcome to another edition of Bozor. This time, we're going to take you through Iran's high-tech medical device productions. We wanted to see who the big players in this specialized market are and check out their activities in the medical health sector. Plus, we wanted to see why this market continues to burgeon and uncover how scientific advancements are contributing to the national economy. Let's start the show. Our quest for answers led us on a journey to the Science and Research Park of Isfahan, where we visited Behyar Sanat-e Sepahan. It was first established over 2 decades ago and now manufactures over 80 types of high-tech medical equipment and products. Its products cover a range of medical devices like hospital furniture, surgical tables, and lighting systems. But its main claim to fame is its advanced nuclear technology, such as the medical linear accelerator. This machine is commonly used for radiation treatments for cancer patients by delivering high-energy X-rays or electrons to the region of a patient's tumor. It's worth mentioning that this device costs roughly $3 to $4 million in foreign markets. This company can manufacture the linear accelerator at a third of this price. Plus, 90% of the device components are homegrown in Isfahan province. This company also makes other types of nuclear medical technology, such as the U-arm and ceiling-mounted radiation therapy equipment. But that's not all. They manufacture security and inspection systems used in airports, such as X-ray machines and handheld metal detectors as well. Developing indigenous technology of its kind has saved the country millions of dollars on imports and has benefited many patients so far. It might be interesting to know that the technology for creating radiation therapy devices has been generally monopolized by the United States, Britain, and China. Iran is the fourth country in the world to be able to domestically manufacture such complex and sensitive nuclear technology. And this is all thanks to massive advancements in Iran's research and academic circles. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This knowledge-based firm employs over 500 engineers and specialists such as medical physicists, oncologists, and dosimetrists, among others. This firm also collaborates with the National Atomic Energy Organization, the Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology, Ministry of Health, and Isfahan University of Medical Sciences. Dependability and accuracy of its products are key components in delivering high-quality performance. As such, this knowledge-based manufacturer makes its products along international guidelines for quality and safety. It has received its certifications and production permits from the Ministry of Health and Medical Education and National Medical Device Directorate, among many more. As part of its future vision, this firm is eyeing neighboring markets for exports, which are currently facing high demands for linear accelerators. Their ultimate goal is to elevate the quality of lives of people through creating technology that treats ill patients. The products of this company are vital for the treatment of cancer. Due to the cruel sanctions, many restrictions have been placed on Iran's purchase and imports of this equipment and its supporting services. This knowledge-based firm sees the sanctions as an opportunity for growth and advancing scientific knowledge inside the country. Now, medical devices are considered a fundamental component of the healthcare system, and their benefits continue to increase with the advancements of scientific discovery. Iran is globally ranked fourth in the engineering of 1,000 of medical devices, and this sector is thriving in the country. But you don't have to take my word for it. Let's check out some statistics and figures in this field. Domestic medical device production has grown by 213% since 2019, reducing imports by 10% in the same period. Plus, exports of medical devices are up by 10% this year. Over 2,000 different types of medical devices and supplies are domestically produced under the license of the Ministry of Health based on EU standards. That's all based on figures from the Medical Equipment Office at the Ministry of Health. Based on the Medical Device Directorate, there are roughly 1,000 medical device manufacturers nationwide. These companies provide 30% of revenues in the domestic medical device market. The directorate also says export revenues were well over $24 million this year. But the goal is to generate nearly $1 billion in revenues in the coming years. These statistics have been largely credited to governmental support for the development of knowledge and research companies. Several policies have been implemented over the years to help in businesses in their efforts to create new products and increase their exports. The Ministry of Science, Research and Technology recently launched a focus plan to help companies with international standardizations. This program assesses the compatibility of the Iranian knowledge-based products with global markets under the World Trade Organization standards. The plan aims to attract foreign investments. Government officials and industry participants say it's a significant step towards keeping high-tech medical devices and products relevant in the international arena. Iran exports its medical devices and products to numerous countries across the globe. But scores of people from abroad also visit Iran to benefit from the cutting-edge technologies and the excellent medical service. This is called medical tourism. The National Center for Developing Health Tourism says Iran has the potential to earn $7 billion annually from this sector. These days, medical tourism is considered a booming industry as some 24 million patients travel for medical treatments around the globe every year. Patients Without Borders Publishing Group puts the global value at around $90 billion. And Iran is a major destination for health tourism in the region because of the rapid investment in healthcare infrastructure in order to satisfy surging demands. Iran's two popular medical tourist destinations are Tehran and Mashhad. Other popular destinations include the city of Shiraz and Isfahan, but the coronavirus outbreak has significantly reduced the number of travelers. Industry participants say medical tourism is a win-win opportunity both for the country and foreign patients. This is because Iran offers affordable and quality treatment services. While many visit the country for cosmetic surgery, Iran is also known for its organ transplants, heart and neurosurgeons, among other life-saving medical treatments. The government has set goals to increase annual medical travelers to around 2 million over the next 4 years. Before the coronavirus pandemic hit, Iran hosted a record-breaking 600,000 medical travelers in 2019. That's according to the Medical Tourism Department at the Ministry of Health. The ministry says these tourists generated over $1 billion in foreign currency. Simply put, wheat is part of the grass family. Some have argued that wheat domesticated mankind, bringing humans away from the colorful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle and settling them permanently next to their fields. It is also said that wheat is responsible for the agricultural revolution. It has supplied the calories that made it possible for the world's population to raise toward 8 billion people. Presently, wheat is grown on more land areas across the world than any other food crop. This week, we will venture through the vast agriculture industry. We wanted to see how its products are linked to the booming food sector and uncover why it is so important to the economy. So let's get started. Our quest for answers took us to Jor'e Company. It was established nearly 4 decades ago and specializes in producing flour. This flour mill has massive production halls which houses the latest machinery used in this business. Everything coming out of the flour mill is inside each grain of wheat and none of it is wasted. Anything that is not used for human consumption is used for animal feed. It all starts with the wheat that is brought to the mill. Wheat that enters the facilities is sampled and tested before anything else is done. It is analyzed for moisture, gluten, and other characteristics. If it meets the standards, then it is taken to be stored. The miller's job is to separate the grain into different parts. Inside each grain is flour, bran, and germ. This is a gradual process that involves lots of sieving and sifting using giant machines in a closed-circuit process. The second stage, after crushing wheat into coarse fragments, is to add moisture, and it is stored in a separate area for 12 hours. This stage prepares the wheat for further sifting to separate bran and fine flour and is tested again for particular characteristics. Now it is ready for the final grinding phase, where it will be sifted some more. Back in the day, these processes used to be done by stone presses, and it was much faster. It might have taken 10 minutes to make stone grout flour. But with modern mills, the grinding process might take over an hour to complete. Different components of wheat are separated and later recombined to make different blends of flour, which might include bran as well. The final product is either white and bran or wholemeal flour. At this stage, it is finally ready for packaging and distribution. Over the years, this company has expanded its production such that now it produces 12 times more flour on a daily basis compared to when it started out. The production line uses state-of-the-art machinery that has been imported from Germany and Italy to get the job done. An important aspect of quality production is the different types of massive storage silos as well as the raw material this company uses. Having a clear vision for production is also key in maintaining quality, but that's easier said than done. This company believes that having a bright plan for the future and an outline of steps to execute such a plan is critical to a smooth mass production. The mill produces flour along the lines of exports and adheres to national and international standards for production, safety, and quality. Producing the highest quality of products to satisfy its customers is, of course, its main priority. This company has overcome numerous obstacles in order to enjoy its many achievements over the years. One such a hurdle in its journey has been the U.S.-imposed economic sanctions, which has hindered many exporting processes for the businesses. Now, a lot of work and effort goes into farming wheat. The right location, soil conditions, seeds, germination, water, and so much more all make up the ingredients for a good harvest. Over the years, the government has implemented several plans and schemes to help support farmers and wheat productions nationwide. So at the present time, how is the wheat production like in the country? Around 6 million hectares of land across the country are used for farming. That is a 2.5 million hectare increase in land area used to plant crops compared to previous years. About a third of wheat fields in Iran are irrigated and the rest is rain-fed, which makes these crops vulnerable to rainfall variation. That's all according to the National Foundation of Wheat Growers. In March 2020, the government announced a scheme to purchase nearly 75% of domestic wheat productions at guaranteed prices. The goal was to reduce reliance on imports for domestic consumption. However, farmers thought that the government purchased wheat brought them little profit. As a result, some farmers opted to sell their wheat for animal feed at a higher price instead. So the government increased its purchase price to make up for the deficits. Wheat production has witnessed many ups and downs over the years. This year, farmers are dealing with droughts and pests such as locusts, as well as an increase in the cost of fertilizers and seeds. Consequently, there has been a 30% decrease in wheat harvest this year. In order to remedy the situation, the government has granted permission to import wheat and increase the production of seeds as well. Wheat is believed to be an inseparable part of our everyday food, as it can be used for various meals like pasta, bread, cookies, and so much more. It's considered a strategic crop because it can be transformed into different products with added value, which increases profits. In the world today, the food industry is worth billions and is growing at a rapid pace. As you probably know, the national food production is heavily dependent on productions in the agriculture industry. The food industry is the biggest contributor to the national economy. Going off the figures from Iran's Customs Administration, this sector makes up over 20% of Iran's non-oil revenues. This industry is almost entirely privately owned too, and for those who want to enter this sector, it offers a world of opportunities. The food sector also holds the largest share in creating jobs in the country and accounting for around 50% of the country's entire industrial employment. That's according to the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. Over 5 million tons of agricultural and food products were exported from Iran in the first 8 months of this year. Based on data from the Ministry of Agriculture, these exports raked in roughly $3.3 billion. It might be interesting to know pistachios topped the exporting charts in terms of value. Dairy products, sweets, poultry, and aquaculture, as well as a diverse range of agricultural products, are some of the main items exported this year. Iran exports these items to numerous market destinations across the world, including countries in Europe, Asia, and South America. Alright everyone, it's time for me to take you out on the field to walk you through the production procedure of a material that we use on a day-to-day basis. I won't tell you any further. Let's begin the adventure. One of the major innovations of the past centuries has been the introduction and wide adaptation of plastics for many day-to-day applications. The mass use of plastic started in the 1950s and has steadily grown ever since. Today, more than 300 million tons of plastic are produced worldwide every year. The popularity of plastic is due not only to its low production costs, but also its numerous practical characteristics, including its low weight, acid resistance, and flexibility. There is so much more that can be said about this industry, but now it's time for me to pass it over to my dear colleague out on the field for an exciting adventure.
Traditional medicine or modern medicine? This is among the most frequently asked questions. At the end of this episode, you'll definitely get to an answer to this question, as we're going to walk you through an Iranian pharmaceutical manufacturer dubbed Boali Darul, which produces a range of traditional medicine. While traditional medicine uses traditional therapeutic methods, Boali Darul says it constantly conducts research and development to come up with new medications and boost the effectiveness of its medicines. Practitioners of traditional medication say one of the proven advantages of herbal medicine is their zero side effect aspect. Boali Darul says their drugs are produced purely from herbs and will not lead to any serious side effects. The Iranian pharmaceutical firm says it's yet to reach its full capacity in the production of traditional medicine. It says it seeks to produce more drugs for more diseases, and at the same time, it aims to present its products in the global market. Boali Darul takes its name from renowned 10th century Iranian physician Avicenna, who is hailed internationally as the pioneer of traditional medication. Boali Darul says it works on an hourly basis to improve the quality of its products, with the ultimate goal of promoting the acceptance of traditional medicine among the public.
For our final portion of the program, let's take a brief look at a few interesting bits of news and trends in the medical industry. Ever wanted to go for a run, but felt that it was just too tiresome? Well, a group of Iranian researchers have invented a wearable device that helps people run or walk long distances with less pain or tiredness. The device is a lightweight harness worn around the waist and legs with localized springs. The embedded spring stores some energy consumed during activity and later transfers it to the legs without the use of an engine or battery. The developers say it has the ability to increase running efficiency by 8%, making running feel much easier. Recently, there have been numerous developments in Iran's healthcare systems. One trend we've been seeing in the last couple of years is the rise in electronic health services that was spurred by the coronavirus pandemic. Several online platforms have been developed over the past 2 years. These platforms offer non-emergency online doctor visits, counseling, and therapy. Generally, there has been many positive outcomes arising from the mass use of digital health tools during the pandemic. Online care helped relieve the system from great pressure. Iranian medical companies are constantly creating new products streamlined into the market. An Iranian biotechnology company is taking steps towards producing a kit for diagnosing congenital and genetic disorders. The kit analyzes 26 sites of repetitive short sequences of the genome from embryonic samples. It performs rapid prenatal diagnosis of chromosomal disorders, including Down syndrome, Turner syndrome, and Edwards syndrome, just to name a few. The developers say the kit is more accurate and can detect more disorders than its foreign counterparts. Finally, that covers our program for today. Let us know what you think by sharing your thoughts via email. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe and bye-bye.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us. The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Something that we can learn from Islam is how we conduct ourselves as far as employers, as far as directors of a company or an organization, as far as rulers. And what we can learn also from Islam is how we conduct ourselves as employees, as workers, as people who are a part of an organization. What kind of responsibility do you have in dealing with those who are under you, those who you are responsible for? You employ someone to do something, you ask them to do something. What kind of expectation is there from your side as the employer? What kind of expectation is there from the worker's side, from the employee's side? We know that working is something that is a part of our social system, and we can't do everything ourselves. You know, we need to ask someone to do some labor work for us, for example. What is the Islamic attitude to this? And how are you dealing with these kind of affairs? You know, something unfortunately that we can see in our Muslim community is we don't have that much trust towards employers, and we don't have that much confidence and trust towards employees. You do a job for somebody, they rip you off, they don't give you the money. You get someone to come and do a job for you, they don't do the job rightly, and then they take your money and they leave. And it works both ways. You know, some people say, well, you can't trust these laborers, the workers, you know, because they're never going to do the job properly, and they get their money and then they run away. At the same time, you always hear the other side of the argument where they say you can't trust these, the boss or the employer or someone who has contracted you to do something, because you're going to do the job for them and then they're not going to meet their end of the contract or the agreement and they don't pay you. So it's working. Unfortunately, it's happening both ways. How do we deal with this? You know, there are many beautiful ahadith that we can read from Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam that discuss this important topic. I think the one important approach that we need to remember is that you always need to keep in mind that when it does come to issues to do with money, there are two things that you always need to remember. Number one, stick to your word. Doesn't matter how the other person is dealing with it, you stick to what you say. You said this, you stick to it. Stick to your word. And there's nothing more important than that. And number two, always try to halil, to legitimize your money. You make sure that this money that I receive, I deserve it. It's my right. I'm eligible to take this money. If you take money and you don't do what you should, you don't meet your end of the bargain,
then of course it's not going to be halal money, it's going to be haram money. You're going to eat that, you're going to buy clothes with that, you're going to buy food with that, you're going to feed your children with that money. Why would you want to give your children a luqma haram? And so I think these two important points need to always be in our minds. Number one, that I meet my side of the agreements, I stick to my word, I'm committed and loyal to it. And number two, that I legitimize, I halil, I make sure that what I am taking, I am eligible to have, I deserve it, it's my right, it's my halal for me to have.
Ayatollah Javadi Amri, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
أطيب الكسب عمل الرجل بيده. That's why Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he says the purest. Here طيب, here means the purest. The purest of work is that a man works himself, that you do the job yourself. That's the purest of work. We need to always remember that, you know, you're asking someone else to do something, well, you know, you won't be able to do everything yourself. You know, someone, it might not be within your profession to do something. But Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says that you need to always remember that you choose right people to do the right job. If you make a mistake in choosing an unfaithful person, a unqualified person, then of course, you know, you're going to have to face the consequences of such a wrong decision. He says, ثُمَّ أُنْظُرْ فِي أُمُورِ عُمَّالِكَ فَاسْتَعْمِلْهُمْ اِخْتِبَارًا وَلَا تُوَلِّهِمْ مُحَابَاتًا. You know, don't have any kind of favoritism over who it is that you are choosing. If they don't have the qualifications, don't employ them. فَإِنَّهُمَا جِمَاعٌ مِّن شُعَبِ الْجَوْرِ وَالْخِيَانَةِ. If you don't have any kind of disciplining in the way you are choosing, then of course it's going to lead to not only oppression, but also betrayal. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he says, إِذَا أَسْتَأْجَرَ أَحَدُكُمْ أَجِيرًا فَلْيُعْلِمْهُ أَجْرَهُ. Now, if you are going to employ someone, from the get-go, from the very beginning, you agree, both of you agree on what is going to happen. I want you to do this, and you will be paid that. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi says, if you have employed someone, then you make sure you inform them of their payments. He also says, give the employee their wages before their sweat dries. So they've done their job, you're happy with the job, you pay them before the sweat dries. Don't give them a hard time and don't say, oh, I'm sorry, I did tell you this, but I'll give it to you then, and then later on it's going to be a hassle. And you don't know what that person is going through as far as their daily means and requirements, financial means and requirements, and all these other problems and issues that unfortunately regularly occur in our community. Very, very sad. Wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There Was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.